It's Wednesday, and that means time for the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
The voters of Texas 23 have cast their ballots. The Democrats can add another point to their column. On Saturday, Democratic Congressman William Jefferson, still under investigation for corruption, was handily reelected by the people of New Orleans. Plus, lots and lots to talk about in the run-up to the 2008 presidential election. Give us a call with your questions about the week in politics. If you were in New Hampshire Sunday, did you witness Obama mania? Give us a call. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is talk@npr.org. And back from his two-week hiatus is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and our favorite political junkie. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Good to have you with us.
Hi,
as always, Ken.
Thank you so much.
All right, let's start with that congressional race in Texas. Democrat Ciro Rodriguez unseated six-term Republican Congressman Henry Bonilla. And the consensus was that Bonilla was out of step with Hispanics in his district.
Well, Henry Bonilla actually is Mexican-American. He's the only Mexican-American member, Republican member of Congress. But he was pretty conservative. He voted more with whites, basically, than Hispanics. A lot of people called him Henry Vanilla, not Bonilla, because he was more Anglo than Latino. But what happened here, first of all, the fact that the Democrat won this race yesterday was stunning. It was a shocker. Nobody saw it coming. But what really precipitated this is that back in June, the Supreme Court ruled that of all the Tom DeLay redrawn districts in the state, this one was in violation of the Voting Rights Act. It diluted, illegally diluted the vote of Hispanic voters. So they redrew the lines. Seven other Democrats got in the race with Henry Bonilla. Hmm. And on November 7th, Bonilla got 49% of the vote. Had he gotten 50% of the vote, he would have won an eighth term. But because he only got 49%, he was thrown into this runoff. And with the Democrats united, now knowing that the Democrats were in the majority party, Ciro Rodriguez had a new angle to push for these voters.
And I presume part of why, or at least the reason that people were so shocked by this, was that the lines had been redrawn in such a way that it was just expected that a Republican would
No. It was actually it became a 61% Hispanic district.
Okay.
It was drawn to help Democrats. I mean, it was drawn more fairly to help the Latino, the fair Latino population. But in a sense, it was, even though it was supposed to help the Democratic candidate, we thought the Republican was going to win because he had a tremendous war chest. He's been around for 14 years. And Rodriguez is not really a great campaigner, but there was a very strong get-out-the-vote effort by Latino groups. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee poured in nearly $1 million. And it was a low turnout, and it was Rodriguez supporters who showed up yesterday.
So what does this mean for the Democrats?
Well, it's one more vote. It's now 231 230 Democrats in the House, only 201 Republicans, which is basically a complete reversal of what happened, what it was like prior to the election on November 7th.
All right. And other news from the midterm elections, William Jefferson, the Democratic congressman from New Orleans, he's under investigation for corruption and yet was reelected on Saturday.
Which is so unusual for New Orleans because, you know, it's a beacon of ethics and everything. Here's the thing. First of all, two former associates of William Jefferson have pleaded guilty for bribing the congressman. The FBI ostensibly found $90,000 hidden away in his freezer. Now, having said that, no charges have been brought forward against William Jefferson, and this investigation has been going on for months. I thought he was going to lose, and he was facing a fellow African-American candidate, a state representative by the name of Karen Carter. A lot of good governments, a lot of white Republicans were supporting her, and that probably was part of her downfall. But what I learned about this race is that the same federal government that was investigating William Jefferson in the minds of many voters was the same federal government that failed New Orleans with Katrina relief. Mm-hmm. And failed to come to their aid with Katrina. And I think Jefferson touched into that to that kind of support, and he won pretty convincingly, 57%, which was not close at all.
But this is playing out in an interesting way in Congress because incoming House Majority Leader Nancy Pelosi.
Incoming
Speaker Nancy Pelosi says that Jefferson will not serve on the Ways and Means Committee unless he's cleared of any wrongdoing.
That's correct. And as a matter of fact, most people are still expecting an indictment. It's very interesting to see why the voters of New Orleans, of Louisiana's 2nd Congressional District, wasn't at least afforded a decision by the Justice Department one way or the other, either clear him or charge him. But the fact that they've kept in limbo is very, very odd. Most people think that Jefferson ultimately will be leaving Congress. But again, no charges have been filed.
But this is part of Nancy Pelosi's promise, keeping her promise that the Democrats are going to...
The most ethical Congress in history, she says. Yes, and that's why she took... As leader of the Democrats, she took William Jefferson off the Ways and Means Committee because of this investigation.
Now, she's actually considering the formation of an outside ethics panel to be kind of a watchdog over Congress. Is that...
Well, you know,
unprecedented, or
well, it is unprecedented, and we've talked about this for a long time. That basically, for the longest time, I mean, there are some instances where that's not been the case, but for a long time, the history of the Ethics Committee was protecting your own, and we saw that with the Mark Foley incident, that a bipartisan Ethics Committee, Doc Hastings, a Republican from Washington, Howard Berman, a Democrat from California, came out with a report saying, "Look, the Republican leadership was awful in the fact that they failed to protect." Underage congressional pages, but did anybody break any law? Was any sanctions made? Was anybody punished? No, there was nothing except for the fact that, you know, they're not happy about what happened. So a lot of people feel that it's impossible for Congress to judge itself, to investigate itself, and so many Democrats and Republicans, some Republicans too, feel that the best way to do it is going outside Congress.
But how would an outside ethics panel work?
Well, it could be the same thing, like you have an independent, you know, when you have the Justice Department investigating something within the government and they go to an independent counsel. I mean, I don't think there's specifics yet, and I'm not even convinced that this will happen, but again, it's part of Nancy Pelosi's new, you know, the first 100 hours she's talking about in the 110th Congress with things, you know, changing, you know, no more politics as usual.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're winding down towards the end of 2006. That means we have to look towards the 2008 presidential race, and a lot of energy is already out there regarding that, specifically about Barack Obama. What do you make of this phenomenon?
I don't know what to make of it, because somebody said to me they've never seen anything like this since Bobby Kennedy in 1968. That's 40 years ago. The fact is, Barack Obama has been in the U.S. Senate for 1 year and 11 months. He doesn't have a sterling record. Of course, it's hard to have a record after just 2 years in the Senate, plus the fact that he's in the minority party, but of course soon to be in the majority. But the fact is that... That people don't look at him and see as a black candidate, a white candidate, a liberal, a conservative. They see somebody who represents hope or the future. Whether he can, you know, stand up for that and represent that is one thing. But people see in him what they want to see in ideals. They don't like Hillary Clinton because of X, Y, and Z. They don't like the other Democrats in the field. They don't like the Republicans. Barack Obama seems to transcend race, transcend party politics. But of course, we know, we've seen this in the past, that these dream candidates, that if they would only get in the race and things would change, but the moment they get in the race, the opposition research takes a hold, the media takes a hold, and they become like everybody else, and they become, you know, driven down. So,
but the media is also sort of fostering this right now. I mean, there were hundreds, or at least, you know, I've read about 100 reporters following them around.
160 reporters in New Hampshire.
In New Hampshire.
1,500 people showed up.
Every time I looked at the television screen the last couple of days on CNN, I've seen, you know, a Barack Obama's face. And I started thinking, is this going to work against him ultimately? Are people going to get tired of, feel like that he's being pushed at them?
Well, the fact is, I mean, you know, a few years ago, John Edwards was a fresh face, and now he's yesterday's news, which is remarkable to me. But also look at the fact of what happened with Howard Dean. The media really created Howard Dean as this amazing candidate, this candidate from nowhere, from the blogosphere, from the internet. And it was also the media that helped break him, pull him down by saying, you know, he's too out of control. He's, he, you know, says things off the cuff. He can't win. So the media does have a track record of building up and pulling down candidates within months of each other.
We are talking with Ken Rudin, our favorite political junkie, about politics. If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call at 800-989-8255. Let's take a call from Sam, and he's calling from Texas. Hi, Sam.
Hi, can you hear me?
Now, Ken, go ahead.
My question is, do you think that the same kind of race-based negative campaign ads that hurt Harold Ford in Tennessee can be used against Barack Obama should he choose to run for president?
Well, that's a fair question, Miriam. Once upon a time, there were a lot of white voters saying that Harold Ford was the kind of black candidate that they could support, that, you know, he was moderate enough, that he wasn't, you know, part of this, he wasn't a Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton type of candidate. But ultimately, when it came down to the vote, whites voted against Harold Ford. And actually, that's probably the only Republican victory worth noting in the whole 2006 election, the fact that Bob Corker beat Ford in Tennessee. But again, it sounds like Wonderama. Barack Obama does have things in his past that he's talked about. There was a Chicago Tribune did a story a few weeks ago about perhaps a little deal that is some questions. Barack Obama has talked about that he has not been an angel in his past. Everybody has a dark side. Everybody has a side that probably the opposition will gladly pull out. But again, so far, it's remarkable how nobody has really said a bad word about Barack Obama. That he's, you know, unlike Hillary Clinton, who's too cautious, Joe Biden, who talks too much, Evan Bayh, who's too dull. I mean, everybody has a criticism, but I've not heard one criticism about Barack Obama.
All right. Thanks for your call, Sam.
Thank you.
And I want to remind our audience that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. If you'd like to join our discussion with Ken Rudin, give us a call at 800-989-8255. Ken, here's an email from John. He says, I really like Bill Richardson, governor of New Mexico, and would love to see him run for president. I think his foreign policy background would serve our political climate well now, since the USA seems to be the scorn of the world. Do you think he is considering running for president, and what are his chances against Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama?
Well, he definitely is considering it. He's considered it in the past. He was on Al Gore's shortlist in 2000 for vice president. Apparently, he was on John Kerry's shortlist for vice president in 2004. Richardson does have foreign policy credentials, having served in the UN. He is Hispanic. He is a governor. And most presidents do come from the governor's ranks, as we saw with Bush and Clinton and Reagan and Jimmy Carter and people like that. The word is that maybe January or February, there'll be a Richardson exploratory committee that'll come out. Look, Hillary Clinton, if you look at the money, if you look at the endorsements, if you look at the power people in the Democratic Party, Hillary Clinton still has to be seen as the leading Democratic candidate.
And yet Democrats seem very nervous about Hillary Clinton.
Exactly. And they say that they feel that that she brings baggage, or she brings memories of the 8 years of Bill Clinton that they would rather forget. But at the same time, she's also very smart. She's very she's certainly capable. She was overwhelmingly reelected in New York and with Republican votes to spare. So there is a love-hate relationship about Bill Clinton, about Hillary Clinton, similar to Bill Clinton, but even more so, that we've seen with a lot of polarizing figures. And the question is, the question about John McCain has always been, he could win in November, but he might not be able to win the nomination. The sense about Hillary Clinton is that, yes, she could win the nomination, but could she unite the country in November of 2008? And that's the question that still hasn't been answered.
All right, let's get another call in here. Anne is calling from Walnut Creek, California. Hi, Anne.
Hi. Well, to me, the ideal candidate who could win all of the above, all of the categories that we're talking about, and do the job is Al Gore. And, you know, Ralph Nader's not going to rear his ugly head this time.
Is he?
You know, and you know, the mood of the country is not anger towards the Democrats. And Al Gore just represents everything that people who now have their hope, you know, getting up their hope again, that Al Gore would follow through on this.
Well, the question is whether he wants to do it, and that question has not been answered. He says he has not ruled out running in 2008. There are a lot of people who feel that he was robbed of the election in 2000, and that debate will go on forever. They feel that, you know, with buyer's remorse, they could, you know, have a do-over in 2008 that they failed to do in 2000. Gore has been against the war from the beginning, unlike Hillary Clinton, again, unlike John Kerry and John Edwards, you know, who voted for the war. But at the same time, he has not indicated that he wants to run. Now, the question also is, would he enter a race that includes Hillary Clinton? It was Bill Clinton who brought Al Gore onto the ticket. Running against Hillary Clinton would be a tremendous collision in the Democratic Party.
Right.
The question is whether he would do that. But there are a lot of Democrats who say that certainly given the sense that the war is such a mistake, and given the fact that the war is far more unpopular now than it was in 2004, Gore would be the likely candidate to pick up that banner. But again, he has to decide, and there's no indication that he has decided.
Thanks for your call, Anne. You know, interesting, Dennis Kucinich, Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich, put his hat in the ring. A lot of people are saying, why is he doing it again? He's not going to win. On the other hand, he's very strongly against the war, and he's been saying that the Democrats are still not coming out against the war with a strong enough position. Is that what his candidacy is all about? He wants to make sure that the really strong anti-war discussion occurs?
There's no question. I mean, the joke, of course, was that, you know, people say they're not sure if he ran in 04 or 04 is the number of votes he got in 2004. But the point is that I think that Dennis Kucinich, the congressman from Cleveland, six-term congressman from Cleveland, is probably angrier at his own party than he is about President Bush. And the real reason, they say, look, the Democrats got a big victory on November 7th. They took control of the House and the Senate, and yet they're still voting to fund the war in Iraq. And Dennis Kucinich says, that's insane, that if I'm going to run for president, if this election, the 2008 election, is going to be about the war, the conduct of the war, the answer has to be no, no funding for the war. And if he's elected president, obviously, you know, he'd have an immediate pullout. Whether that's sane or not, whether that's logical or acceptable or not, there's a constituency in the Democratic Party who says this war has gone on long enough and somebody's got to say no to it.
Yeah. And while we're focusing on Obama and Hillary Clinton, there are a lot of people, other people out there who are forming exploratory
committees. Oh, absolutely. There's John Kerry, there's John Edwards, there's Joe Biden, the senator from Delaware, there's Evan Bayh, who has been, you know, raising a lot of money. There's Bill Richardson, as the earlier call said. Tom Vilsack, the outgoing governor of Iowa, is already officially declared. Wesley Clark is probably going to get in the race as well.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us, Ken.
Thank you, Len.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. You can read his column, Political Junkie, or listen to his podcast on our website, npr.org. You can do both. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.